The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is head priest at the monastery and the abbess of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Hello, Kiwis. I can imagine you all there. I can't see you now, but having been to Rota Weedy, I see you all in that room, enjoying that little fireplace, perhaps. It's nice to be able to do this together, and to all of you on continuous thread, and to you here in the Zendo. Right now, you have the opportunity. Look for the essence of mind. This is meaningful. When you look at mind, there is nothing to be seen. In this very not seeing, you see the definitive meaning. If you do not grasp with your mind, see that there is nothing to be seen, you will find a fresh state of being. It's good for this hot night. A fresh state of being available at every moment, really. It's said that the Buddha prophesied, when my teaching is thin like a tea leaf, the embodiment of the Great Mother, whose name is Labdrun, will come and her activity will be far-reaching. Anyone who is involved with her activity will be liberated. Her teachings are love letters to those of us in pain. So tonight I wanted to share meeting Machig Labdrun, who's a Tibetan female teacher from the 11th century. She lived from 1055 to 1145. So she's 55 years before Dogen, and 1,500 years after the Buddha. And I'll say a little bit more about her later. For me, she is very much alive. Very much alive. She offers us a way to pause in ourselves, find connection, cut and sever what we don't or is no longer needed and serving us towards peace when we feel overwhelmed in this sometimes crashing ocean we call life. She shows us an awakened view to see that we're really the calm of the ocean. And being unsettled, we experience more of the tumultuous pounding waves sometimes, confusing and seemingly unbearable feelings that arise. And at the same time, we'll never overtake our Buddha nature and the peace we can find just below the surface. We can't avoid having an experience we can't control. So how do we meet this? Machig tells us straight up like the Buddha, the essence of life is that it's challenging sometimes. Sometimes we know it's sweet, sometimes bitter, sometimes all of that. Sometimes we have a tense body. Sometimes we're relaxed and open. Sometimes we have a headache. Sometimes we're 100% healthy. She says, from an awakened perspective, trying to tie up all those loose ends is a death because it involves rejecting our basic experience. It's aggressive to think this way, trying to flatten out all the rough spots and imperfections for a nice smooth ride. She offers what her teacher said to her. Right now, you have the opportunity. Look for the essence of mind. This is meaningful. When you look at mind, there is nothing to be seen. In this very not seeing, you see the definitive meaning. So, how did I meet Machik? A while ago, I was leafing through a Sun magazine, and I came eye to eye with a Tibetan woman with a baby swaddled on her back. An infant, maybe not an infant, it was more like maybe 1 years old. And I just stopped on that page, and I just looked into their faces. They were facing the photographer. And at that moment, I was in her place. Now, I don't have that with every photograph, and maybe you've had this, but I was her. I was there. It was unmistakable. It's hard to even talk about. But every cell in my body was right where she was. I stood in that exact place as that person. The young mother was high atop a mountain on a sky burial platform, the charnel grounds, what we might call the graveyards. But they aren't quite as pretty as our graveyards. There's no smooth green lawn, no white carved stones with angels and nice words on stones. In the image, the earth was littered with chopped up bodies in stages of deterioration. And these big, majestic vultures, the size of her baby, swaddled on her back, and tiny birds in between, and a couple other little animals, a dog was there, were pecking and tearing away at the bones and the flesh. And she was taking her child there. She was taking her child there. Perhaps the closest thing to our charnel ground might be not a graveyard, but a hospital emergency room. I think that space is grounded in honesty of how the human realm functions. It smells, it bleeds. It's full of unpredictability and at the same time, radiant wisdom, good food that nourishes us, that which is beneficial and pure. And a while back before that, I remember a friend asked me, kind of an offhand way, what I wanted done with my body when I died. And just what popped out of me was, it would be great to be food for the birds, to be shared and devoured and nourish living things in such a way. And this was not something I ever thought of before. I didn't even think of that before. And I had no idea where the thought came from. Yet there it was. The monastics had to work on their proxies, what we want to do with our bodies when we die, at the end of life, wishes. So I wrote down this wish, even though it's not legal. But it's a wish. And who knows at that time. During the quarantine, I watched a few crows eat a squirrel on South Plank Road. It was very captivating to watch them do their crow thing. They're amazing birds. And I had to watch them. I had a charcoal pencil, which was perfect for crows. And just watched the scene for a while. And I love that their group is called a murder of crows. I don't know why, but they're a murder of crows. So this burial ground touched something very deep in me, and I started wondering about them. I didn't really know anything about them and the ritual behind them, so I started to explore and found my way to Machik. And one day I was in Daido Roshi's studio, and I noticed a book that was still in cellophane. He hadn't even opened it yet. And I pulled it off the shelf, and it said Machik Lobdran and the Foundations of Chud by Jerome Idu. And I said, wow, do you know anything about Machik and the burial grounds? Could you tell me more about this? And he made a joke. He said, it's for the birds. Here, he put it in my hands. Go find out about it. Go read about it. Her activity will be far-reaching. Anyone who is involved with her activity will be liberated. So she is one of my heroines. She's a crone mentor. We just looked at crones in our last, the wisdom of aging. And this is not just in, it's in any body, any gender, a crone. It's not just in a female body. And she did choose to manifest as a woman. And there's a whole long story about that, which is very interesting to read. You can find that one out. I'm not going to talk about that, but very interesting about all the stories around how she came to that decision. But she was completely interested in her blind spots. So her afflictions, obstructions, emotions could get clearer and clearer and clearer. She was very interested in seeing her blind spots. And that was very influential. I was like, oh my God, wow, you are fierce. She had this willingness to do this turning in and seeing and sharing that nothing really attacks us but our confusion. That perhaps there are no solid obstacles except around our hardening views of what we're seeing and our need to protect ourselves from being touched. Our need to protect ourselves from being touched. Maybe the enemy is that we don't like the way reality is now. How is it going now? Reality now. Heat. Sitting still in zazen, listening to a talk at night. Maybe the enemy is that we wish it would go away fast. And that nothing does go away, as we know, until we go through what we need to know about it and see it all the way through. So she lived from 1055 to 1145 and was born into a privileged Buddhist family at the time of great religious innovation in Tibet. And one of her major contributions was this systematization of chud, which means to cut or sever through. Now, I am not a chud practitioner, although I've worked with Soltram Elion. She had a course called Feeding Your Demons, which is, she is supposedly a incarnation of Machik Lobdran. And the spirit of the practice begins with this willingness, as you are doing here, to turn to what scares us. And we're not just thrown to the wolves here, right? It's not just turn to what scares you. We have a lot of support. We have a lineage of wisdom, as was mentioned. We have Sishin. We have the earth that we're sitting on. We have support. We have each other. So we can do this facing alone and embrace what we're afraid of. And she teaches that we can do this without aggression. And actually where we can touch a sense of joy, because we find things are not what they seem to be. Right? That's kind of joyful when we're like, oh, what I thought was true, what I believed, may not be, isn't, in fact. So she shows us there is a beauty in liberation when we embrace and not fight. When we embrace and not fight. I always think of this image that helps me. You know those toys when, I guess it's a toy when you were young, it's like a little bamboo thing and you put your fingers in them. I used to have this friend of my father's that did that with me all the time, you know. And you put your fingers in, and if you pull, you can't get out, right? So that's what we do. We kind of get in there, and then we start pulling, and it gets tighter and tighter and tighter, and you know how to get out, right? Everyone knows how to do it, right? You have to give. Oh, I shouldn't tell you. I should let you keep pulling. You got to give. You got to give in. It's like a swing dance. You got to give weight to make it dance, right? You and your partner have to give weight to make the thing work. So you got to give it in to get out. You got to go in to get out. So she said, it's only by meeting and even nurturing what we consider most other that true liberation can be attained. As long as there is someone or something out there, we are held in the prison walls of our own dualistic thinking. So think about what she's saying. She's giving us an incredible teaching on compassion and radical inclusivity right there with ourselves. We have to be radically inclusive of all aspects of ourself, inside, and then take it out. She says, with a loving mind, cherish more than a child the hostile gods and demons of apparent existence, and tenderly surround yourself with them. She says, cut the mistaken notion of self-identity in which I set myself over and apart from all that is not me. True freedom lies in the lived realization of non-separation. When we cherish our demons, this true liberation begins to become palpable. When we cherish our demons, the true liberation begins to become palpable. In our tradition, we might call this Mara, this demon Mara. She says, use them. In essence, they are part of the goodness of being alive. But instead of letting them be or offering them as a nourishment, we take the energy and try to regain ground. We use them to try to make everything secure and predictable and real again, to fool ourselves about what's true. So she's saying, in effect, Pick one of the most difficult aspects of your experience. where you see you draw the line. No, 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 no. No, 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 no. No way. No, no. Where you can create a boundary between self and other, where you don't want to be your experience. So it could be a tightly held belief, a great insight. I'm sorry, get insight into how we throw kerosene on emotions so it will feel more real. Or we spread blame, or we self-justify. And she says, we don't have to consider this process an obstacle or a problem. How many of us say, my problem is, so we just do this silly thing again and again because it's hard to dwell in uncertainty and not knowing. We feel awkward, in pain of not knowing. She says, go right there. When that comes, embrace it. Embrace it completely. Sit in and through all the machinations and find the clearing. When Machik was asked to define what a demon was, she replied, a demon is not some great black thing that petrifies whoever sees it. A demon is anything that obstructs the achievement of freedom. An obstacle, a doubt, a confusion. The part of us that turns away, that doesn't want to change, that wants to have it all together. There's no greater demon than a fixation on a self. Until this is cut off, all devils wait with open mouths. The Buddha, until his dying day, was said to have been aware of Mara, the demon, traveling right along his side. You may recall when Siddhartha slipped out in the middle of the night. As he left, he had this dispute with Mara. Go back, Mara chided. Go on and you will fail. I will never cease to dog you in your footsteps. Lust, malice, and anger will betray you. Sooner or later, you will fail. Have we seen that in a round of zazen? We may have entered session and we heard, go back, go back, as we're pulling in the front gate. What am I doing? Go back, chides Mara. And we're still driving, parking, getting out of the car. Yeah. Thurman says, Maras are said to be bodhisattvas, dwelling in inconceivable liberation, playing the devil, as it were, to develop living beings. I like that. So we're developing. And of course, we know on the night Buddha attained enlightenment, when he sat under the tree, he was sitting there, as the story goes, if you've seen the movie, with the arrows being shot to distract him from becoming enlightened. And then he turned those weapons into flowers. Into flowers. All the missiles, arrows, swords are coming at us. Aggression coming at us. Our mind attacks them as obstacles that we experience. The part of us that turns away from the demon, from Mara, what Mara is firing is what we need to see clearly. What's being fired? What are we firing? We're all full of ammo. We know this. There's triggers all over. I was listening to something on trauma by Gabor Mate, and he was speaking about us being full of ammunition. Each one of us has all this ammo. And he says, triggers are teeny tiny little things and they're all over and we have them and people have them. And he said, just like when they go off, when it's pulled, don't fire the ammo. That's our job. Don't shoot your ammo because we're loaded. But work with that. Only when Buddha was able to experience the desires and fears that threatened to overwhelm him as nothing but impersonal and ephemeral conditions of mind and body, did they lose their power to mesmerize him. Machik wants us to see the real nature of obstacles and how we habitually become confused and lose confidence in our wisdom mind that we're never apart from. So the essence, the heart essence of chud is this ultimate severance. Machig suggested is recognizing the nature of mind, that we recognize the nature of mind, the ineffable, luminous, groundless ground of being. So her lineage is based on the Prajna Paramita. And as we know in the Heart Sutra that we chant every morning, Shariputra talks about the realization of emptiness, the truth of things, with Avalokiteshvara, who's another one of her emanations, Tara. And we know, again, the teachings of emptiness is ultimately that nothing is fixed, nothing can be grasped or possessed. You can't take it with you, is true right now. And Shariputra says, if when this is pointed out to a student of the way, to a bodhisattva, if their heart does not become cowed, does not despair or become despondent, if they don't turn away or become deceited, doesn't tremble, if they're not frightened or terrified, then this person, this student of the way, should be given instruction. It is precisely this that should be recognized as the wisdom of the Buddha. So we're presented with a kind of revolution here to not live and see the world based on what we want the world to be, but to see the world as it is. Pema Chodron, hearing one of Trungpa's older students give a talk, he began by saying, if you're interested in these teachings, then you have to accept the fact that you're never going to get it all together. She was so bummed. You're never going to get your act together fully, completely. And what would that actually look like? I don't know. I keep trying to find it, but we're never going to get, as she said, all those loose ends tied up. We're always going to be in a position where we don't know, where something more can happen to us. Because now is very uncertain, no? That's why it's really powerful if we can be in it. So apparently, she had a life of prestige and privilege, and she gave it up to become a wandering yogini. And she became a mother. She had a few children. Her children were her disciples later on. And then she felt this call to practice the Dharma more intensively. So she left her children with her husband for several years and returned to study and train with her teacher full time. And she eventually became her teacher's teacher, which is rather remarkable. She was never a hermit, but she spent most of her time in service to her students. It's said that when she approached her teacher, Dampa Sangye, she said, "Please, I want to wake up so that I can be of benefit to all sentient beings. I want to help beings. I want to wake up so I can help." And he gave her these five relative practices, the five slogans you might be familiar with. Number one, confess your hidden faults. Number two, approach what you find repulsive. Does that scare you? We did that in art practice once, remember? Approach what you find repulsive. Help those you think you cannot help. Sometimes translated as those you don't want to help. Anything you are attached to, give that up, as in let it go. And the fifth is go to the places that scare you, which I think is all of them, really. All of those places scare us. He added, sentient beings are limitless as the sky. Be aware. Find the Buddha inside yourself. And then he later gave her this absolute fundamental teaching. If you do not grasp with your mind, you will find a fresh state of being. There it is. If you do not grasp with your mind, you will find a fresh state of being. Demons hate practice, right? Because they're afraid that we'll see through the mind's illusions of control, illusion of a solid self. Even the Buddha continued to experience negative mind states. Stephen Batchelor spoke of Buddha nature standing for an open perspective, where we are free to respond to the call of others. And when we're in our Mara nature, we are in our fixed positions that prompt us to react. So there's a perspective and a fixed view or a fixed position. He says, a perspective allows the possibility of pursuing a path into the unknown, where a position ensures that we never stray from the territory we have already staked out. Someone in the art practice sent me a quote from Cézanne, because I was telling them, Cézanne said, if you want to know the nature of reality, paint clouds. Paint clouds. And they sent me this, the day is coming when a single carrot, freshly observed, will set off a revolution. I think we yearn for that carrot experience, that direct, fresh, immediate experience. To be allowing the world to be fresh and unfamiliar. And in Zazen, that's a big part of it, is that each breath is unfamiliar. Each kind of encounter with the koan or with the mind of Shikantaza is uncharted, is fresh, because we're not who we were. We can't drag that along. It's fresh. I think haiku poets were really onto something, just that, you know, I don't know. What is it? Cool breeze trying to find its strength. Bird chirp. No. That's what they do. What's happening? So, there's this wonderful saying that truth has no handles. Truth has no handles. Gives us nothing to grasp, nothing to stand on. Refuses to give us solid ground. Cut away your ground, she says, and perhaps in the space that remains, we can rest in a view that is beyond concept, beyond perspectives. In fact, no view at all. No view at all. By not holding two fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, is not born again into this world. She has this radical carrot. Release all view. Echoing one of her teachers, Longchenpa, who said the best view is no view. The supreme severance, she calls it, that is the ultimate thing to let go of, our attachment to any particular view, the last stronghold of self, maybe. Mayachik leaves us on the threshold of the great mother, Prajnaparamita, the groundless ground of being. We bow in deep respect to Prajnaparamita, mother of all Buddhas, wisdom beyond wisdom. She illuminates all delusion and dispels our fears in reciting the Mahaprajnaparamita Heart Sutra. When view is gone, we can open our arms to vast space, open space, the Great Mother, in which everything is allowed, welcomed, not because it's right or wrong, for or against us, but simply because it is. So I wanted to end with, what time is it? Yeah. I hope it's here. Ode to Low Expectations. Rakusan handed me this. Yeah, it's from The Atlantic by a staff writer, James Parker. So, it was 1993, and I was sitting over a plate of eggs in a cafe in Soho, London. Things were not going well. As a man, as a person, as a unit of society, I was barely functioning. More acutely, I was having panic attacks in an era when people didn't say panic attack. They just said, oh dear. As far as I was concerned, I was going insane. I took a despairing slurp from my mug, then put it back down. As I did so, the side of my hand touched the Formica tabletop, and I felt the radiant heat from the mug where the mug had been resting a second before. Or more accurately, I registered it. Through my cerebral drizzle, the continuous joy-canceling brain rain that was mental reality at that time, I noted it. Energy. Life. Jiggling molecules. The world. A message from the fire of generosity at the heart of the universe. And the message was this. One day, you'll be able to simply appreciate what's in front of you. The tea, the cafe, London, the little lens of warmth on the table, one day, this will be enough. Strive for excellence by all means. My God, please strive for excellence. Excellence alone will haul us out of the hogwash. But lower the bar and keep it low when it comes to your personal attachment to the world. Gratification, satisfaction, having your needs met, fool's gold. If you can get a buzz of animal cheer from the rubbishy sandwich you're eating, the daft movie you're watching, the highly difficult person you're talking to, you're in business. And when trouble comes, you'll be fitter for it. Reality is B+, says my friend Carlo. I'd probably give it an A-, but I take his point. There lives the dearest freshness deep down things, wrote Gerard Manley Hopkins. But there also lives the dearest shoddiness. We're half finished down there, down here, always building and collapsing, rigging up this and that, dropped hammers and flapping tarps everywhere. Revise your expectations downward. Extend forgiveness to your ignorant friends. Extend forgiveness to your ignorant self. Make it a practice. Come to rest in actuality.
Thanks for listening. Looking for in-person practice opportunities? With the easing of pandemic quarantine restrictions, Zen Mountain Monastery and the Zen Center of New York City are once again open for group meditation, services, residency, and retreats. We'll continue to offer online programs to our Sangha near and far, even while we host more in-person events for all those able to travel. You can find all upcoming activities listed on our website, zmm.org.